Hi, I'm Josh, and I had this dream about a really interesting thriller where this girl was doing a sleep study and things started to get beyond her control and it was creepy, and then it resolved in a really satisfying and sensical way. Sadly, that dream did not come true.
Hey, this is Matt, obviously. And, you know, I spent this last weekend here over the eclipse in Ohio with our friends from Slaughterhouse Princess. And they are as advertised, which is really, really chill, really, really nice folks, and utterly befuddling in their own ways. But all that and some skyline chili made the entire weekend immaculate.
Oh, excellent. Let's see. This is Charlie down in Austin. And I was trying to figure out a way to combine whatever the last two there was going to be, but you'll never find me stop motion. You'll never find me stop motion. Like, as in like some like C grade DC villain.
Yeah, that's from the old like early Valiant universe.
Yeah, he's just like
sort of like, trying to bring back.
He's like a big threat, but he's just like, he's made of felt. Like, he's like, I don't know. So there you go. That's what I got for you.
And what's this? What's this? It's PowerShell Hot Dog. So before we talk about four movies this week, more about that later,
bonus.
We have a short called Play Me or Tokeme, in which one woman kind of comes to her senses in a car that's stalled out in the desert, and in her back seat is a dude in handcuffs with a bag over his head. And as she discovers the car won't start, she finds a tape player that says Play Me. And the person says, "Hi, it's me. If you're hearing this, you know, it's you. If you're hearing this, you've lost your memory and you can't trust your memory." And basically we got kind of Memento rules, except it's being caused by the entity or person possibly in the back seat. And we just get 10 minutes of good tension and the perfect ending. So I thought this was really, really cool.
I was quite pleased with this because this could have gone a couple of ways. And at various times during its relatively brief runtime, I was convinced I knew where it was going and was really kind of satisfied with the idea that they like give you a final answer with
the question
of, is she Cray or is he really a thing? And it's like, oh no, he's legit. Like, wow. Like, which implies this whole universe of shit that's gone on outside, like, which I thought was cool. Cause usually that's the kind of thing people would sort of at least be tempted to leave a little more waffly. So like bold choice, but that still was like really high tension all the way through. So yeah, I like this a lot.
So I would say overall, I thought it was shot well and that was interesting. Were you guys satisfied with how they depicted him in terms of like, clearly this is a legit, like a thing. Was that, cause then really the only modification that happens was that like overdub kind of layered dub thing of his voice.
I was glad we didn't get to see to get a look at him, to be honest. I wasn't looking for that.
I was just curious.
I think with it being a short, that would be maybe too much to give away. I think if this is were to be a feature, if you're going to have the reveal be like, yes, the recording is correct and she's had her brain wiped, I think you would do this as like your end of first act reveal. And then from there on, you'd have to have some group of people like resistance fighters against whatever this thing is. And then, I think at that point, then you have to show your monster at some point. But keeping it fully grounded in the real, which kind of behooves the notion that this thing is some kind of infiltrating whatever it is and kind of meant to be a double.
Yeah, like a big shapeshifter, not shapeshifter, like a pod person-y kind of
deal. Yeah, something like that, whatever it might be. I don't know if they even really say what the origin of it is, just that it's bad. So like, yeah, just having it be like, okay, yeah, clearly this does look and sound like a person is like enough to reinforce the narrative that they imply from the scant information they give us.
Okay. I was just curious.
I would dig the idea though of just not us never getting to see it, because what it looks like isn't really the point, right? It's just that seeing its face makes you forget what it looks like. So maybe we did actually see it. Oh. Except, yeah, but whatever.
Well, the trick is you just got to look at it with eclipse glasses and you can't see a fucking thing.
Boy, wouldn't that be like some really like bummed out aliens if they just happened to show up and like, turns out this is the one day everybody's got their They Live glasses.
I was actually just thinking, it'd be like, I was actually thinking, it's funny you say that, Matt, because the thought that I had was Medusa just like meandering around and be like, fuck, this is so annoying. Golly.
Like, oh, I didn't realize that, like,
like you guys UV are so wise to our ways.
Polarized lenses.
One of your lenses is like Trump 2024, and the other is like Biden 2024. Like, God,
doubly polarized. Lenses
have gotten so polarized. Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, I did like her. I did like at the very end, that kind of gave me a start, like the way that she kind of jumps back, because that, mm-hmm. that suggests that she sees the thing, right? Like, that's sort of the.
Yeah.
And so, like, I thought that was very smart, and I just, you know, so, but it took, I actually rewound it back and then watched it again, because, like, so I think, am I projecting what I think is happening? And I was like, no, okay, that's what she kind of went, oh, Christ, on a cracker, that thing. Because then once it's, I guess maybe once it's got a hammer in its neck, it doesn't have the same kind of power, or whatever, then she looks at it and goes, Jesus, Herbert Walker Christ, and like, what? And so, like, I thought that was cool. I would almost say that it needed to be, like, even slightly bigger. Of being like, of even like a bigger reaction, like not like way over hamming it up, but like just sort of even a bigger, like just clutching at the door and like a level of just sort of like, I mean, like if you were sitting there, we're sitting here recording, you know, and like if Sasquatch walked into your living room, it's like you would kind of be like,
first, yeah, ask for an autograph.
Well, I mean, I guess the problem of it is all, you know,
and
all
these people. And Jim, yeah.
And like, well, the problem is, Sasquatch would be tricky because like all the prank bullshit. So, like, a levitating nine-armed lady with like seven breasts on her head.
Tell it slow.
Like, you would, I mean, you would understandably be like, every cell in your body would be like, this is not of my earth. And then it's like, it would, you know, it would be. You know, full body reaction, trying to, you know, kind of scamper away. I think.
So I think you could build that in if, like, again, I think it would have to be longer. But if you somehow indicate or build in the idea that perhaps the memory loss part is sort of like a vampire's thrall, and so therefore maybe killing it, you know, releases you from that, and then everything you knew floods back, and then maybe the horror of all the realizations or whatever it is you might have seen or done or forgotten over however long. Suddenly comes crashing back and you have perfect knowledge of the last however long, then yeah, you know, it's like, oh shit, for like months this thing has lived with me, and every time I freaked out at it, just I looked at it, went boink, and it's gone, you know.
Oh, I dig that. But I also did, like, it seemed to me like she followed her own instruction on the hammer, mm-hmm. just out of, you know, acting purely out of adrenaline,
yeah,
and then had no idea why she did it.
Oh, that's true. Because, yeah, she didn't have the context from the recording at that point. So, yeah, as far as she knows, she just killed a dude and doesn't know why. Oh, that's wild. Like, well, yeah.
Fuck, what now? Yeah, that was kind of where I took it.
I didn't think that far through. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Ah, see, we're discovering layers, like an onion.
Or like a parfait. Yeah, definitely dug it. People should watch it.
Yeah.
So this week we had selected Stop Motion, Come True, and You'll Never Find Me, and we did watch those, but we also just all ended up watching Immaculate. So I wanted to talk about that one too, because to be honest, the other ones I don't have all that much to say about, and we can pretend that I didn't ask you guys about that off mic and be like, dudes, would that be okay?
Right. Could that be cool? Is you springing out. Oh, this is my shocked face.
Yeah. Can we Everyone. Just like vibe on Immaculate for a while?
I'd love it.
So, Immaculate, Inmaculada. This is a movie that Sydney Sweeney has been wanting to make for a minute, and eventually took over producing it to shape it into the thing that she was hoping it would be.
And well, I've been sussed out, by the way, like as far as sniffing out a script and a movie that should be made. Like, good eye.
I've been interested in her for a little bit just because everyone's so fucking weird about her. Mm-hmm. Because to me, she's an attractive woman who is kind of too young for me to really be into in that way, right? Mm-hmm. But she has a pretty face and boobs, and that seems to just break people. Like, they cannot talk about her in a normal fashion. And it's,
well, wasn't it the same weird problem that I've forgotten her name now, that started on Mad Men, the redhead?
Christina Hendricks.
Yeah, that was all anyone would talk about is, like, she's got these huge boobs, but she's actually a really good actress. And it's like, wow, how demeaning.
Like, the people, yeah.
I have plenty of friends with boobs. Some are big, some are small. And turns out they're all just people.
Like, and she might want to talk about something other than the fact that she's boobs. Hot. You know?
Yeah.
Ugh. So, like, it, you know, without laying it on too thick, like, it was cool to see her take on this movie, so that it seemed like, so that she could just be extreme and gory and make ugly faces at the camera, right? Yeah. And she spends half of this movie being very unglamorous, you know, first a nun and then like 9 months pregnant, and then the other half running and screaming and bleeding. And it's like, that is super cool that that's what she wanted to do with this. That's great.
Yeah. You can sort of tell sometimes when someone, and, you know, rightfully so, because Hollywood's awful, and especially to women. But like, people are not willing to make choices and do projects and things that might make them look foolish or not perfectly poised at all times, because people are shitty. And, like, yeah, this was a role that was, I think, played with no ego. Because you, like, at least from my viewing, was like, wow, this is, like, fully immersive, whole hog. Like, I kind of forgot what else I'd seen her in. Because I was more just, like, watching this in this moment. And was, like, super into it. And I was like, oh, right. This and this and this and whatever. And I was like, yeah, all that stuff's great. But I wasn't really thinking about those other things. You know, the way you can't really watch a, like, Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks movie without seeing the actor. And I didn't feel like I had that experience at all, despite being familiar.
Yeah. It kind of made me think of Jennifer Lawrence in No Hard Feelings.
Yeah.
Cause another she great has turn. A scene where she's skinny dipping with a guy and people try to steal their clothes, and she kicks the shit out of three people while naked. And she said they had asked if she wanted to get a body double or if she wanted to tone that down. And she was like, no, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, God, we are so doing this. And, like, that is great.
And totally, As it came up on, I think, Ice Cream Social, and I totally agreed. Like, I miss non-sexual nudity in things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the just stupid shit, like, you know, the camp kids in a movie, like mooning the nerd or whatever, like stuff like that, where it's just like dumb and funny, or like, yeah, getting in a fight while naked is just hilarious. And it's not like, oh, look how hot. It's just like, what a silly situation, you know? And the idea that it can, you can use nudity for like a comedy punchline in a way that's not overtly sexualized. And that's really powerful. And
funny. Bodies are also just pretty funny.
Yeah. They're just goofy as shit. Yeah.
Well, and the thing with this one too is that, and we kind of, it's like we kind of chatted about this briefly, but then we kind of communicated about it too, is that, like, you know, to your point about the how she's depicted in the thing, it's kind of like, it doesn't, and at no point do you just go like, it's like, oh, she's getting into a bath, whatever else. You just sort of like, this lady is fucked, and there's this evil situation happening, and it's like, at no point is it sort of like, it's like, oh, she could be in a bathtub and maybe wearing less clothing. Like, it doesn't even factor in.
Yeah.
And then, like, they have a scene in the bathtub and she's pregnant and uncomfortable, you know?
And like, you're listening to this dialogue. Yeah, exactly. You're listening to this dialogue between her and one of the other nuns, and you're going like, are they going to both make it out of here? Is even one of them going to make it out of here? Like, I was fully engrossed in what they're talking about the whole time and was like, oh, this rules. Like, I was really sad that, like, when I went and saw it, I was one of four people in the theater, but, yeah, really love the experience.
Well, and then also too, I think it's so funny too, with all, as Josh, to Josh's point about the way that, like, the greater public has been interacting with this, just acting in the weirdest fucking way. I always think about, like, yeah, I guess, like, people know her from, like, Euphoria, a couple other things, but then, like, and then she was also in Sharp Objects, the one with Patricia Clarkson and Amy Adams and a couple other people. But more to the point, she was in the first season of White Lotus, the one that's set in Hawaii, and it's great because she's like the daughter of the to the main characters, Connie Britton and Steve Zahn. And so she's like got this very, very much of like a influencer at Coachella level of depth. Like their style consultant tells them which books to look like they're reading next to the pool, that kind of thing. But what's great about it is like, so this early on, you're like, oh, she's going to be this like kind of like sexualized whatever, and this is gonna be, that's gonna be this whole thing. But what it ends up being is that, like, yeah, she's like wearing a bathing suit by a pool, but once somebody kind of calls out the game pretty early on, then it doesn't matter if she's attractive or unattractive or else. Now it's sort of like a, oh, I'm just really wrestling with the concept of the fact that I don't have a lot of substance. I don't know what to do with that information because now I'm aware of it. I was sort of drifting next to it. Now I'm part of it. Now I'm aware of this. Now I own the fact that I'm kind of about as shallow as a puddle. And it's sort of like, and so you watch her kind of crumple and then be defiant and like fight against it, but then fall into it. And it's a lot of nuance in this character you would not expect fuck one of that to be in. And it's like, so when I think, when I hear all this nonsense about everything, so whatever else, I think like, Do you not recognize she's really talented at acting? Like, she's actually like, go watch White Lotus and watch when you just fall her, watch her fall in on herself, you know, like a mismeasured cake. And it's just like, that's brilliant, you know, and she's fucking brilliant in Under the Silver Lake too. Like Robert John, what's his name? The guy, the Ed Follows guy, his movie, the movie that me and five people liked. It's like, she's great in that too. So it's sort of like, you know, this idea that like, it's like, well, by objective standards, she's an attractive woman. Like, who could give a fuck? Have you watched the work that she's doing in this art form called acting? Are you familiar with that at all?
She showed cleavage and that ended wokeness because now women are allowed to be sexy again.
Yeah. So speaking of things that I think maybe, Scully, you were the first one to bring it up when you were describing liking this, because I was notably not interested in seeing this movie because I was like, ugh, another dumb, there's so many dumb priest and exorcism and nunsploitation movies that are just awful looking. And I've been wrong the last two times because Pope's Exorcist was enjoyable too. But I was going to give this one a miss. And I think when you had seen it, you'd mentioned it was like Rosemary's Baby if Rosemary had agency.
Yeah.
And that was intriguing. And I think that's really a spot on way to look at this, because that was the thing that impressed me, I think, throughout, which is being isolated and, you know, from any kind of outside influence or help. And then also given, like, being manipulated, given no information or false information, and all these forces aligned against her, where she's relatively, if not completely, powerless, and they hold all the cards. And yet she, while understandably, like, you know, frightened or angry or whatever, is resolute and steadfast in her desire to fight back and get free. And like, is working, you know, like she's doing all that on her own with like a little bit of help from her friend until that help is no longer available.
Yeah.
And then just on her own, like, but she's like dogged and perseveres in that. And, you know, is fully doing like the, you know, final girl, like Ripley from Alien type thing. It was just like, it's just me versus awful. And plan on losing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, add another layer of difficulty there.
Well, that was the other thing.
It was impressive how that all played out and fully seemed realized and legit. Yeah.
Well, what's cool about this one and First Omen, which, I mean, hopefully we'll get to at some point in the near future, but the, what's cool about both of these ones where, you know, in some of these earlier religious ones that really have worked well, there is this omnipresent bigness of the church. And it's sort of like, and the church is going to do, and you kind of like, oh, the one good way is the good, they, you know, it's good doing good. And it's like, but the, with both First Omen and then with this, like, they bring in this idea that, like, you could be a member of the church and you could have an idea, and the idea can be so batshit fucking crazy that you have convinced yourself that it's right.
And well, like, they literally have the line that she's like, how can you think this is right? And he goes, if God didn't want us to do this, he would have stopped us. And I was like, there you go, bud. Like, and just like, justified the Crusades. Like, holy shit. Amazing. We should say
the Crusades were
Yeah, the premise of the movie is like young nun goes to Italy and is isolated. Turns out that place has some blood they scraped off one of the nails from the crucifixion.
Which I fucking love that. Oh my God, I love that so much. Yeah,
and thinks they're going to like genetically engineer the new savior. And part of what I loved is like that is an insane, bonkers exploitation film level premise.
Yes. Oh, it's yes.
So spooky.
Oh, yes.
But it works because it's like, oh, great. Yeah, these guys are nuts, though. That's the whole point. They're insane and trying to do insane shit. So she's fighting these people who are, again, doing this stuff in the guise of religion, but they're just crazy. And that doesn't make them less scary. Like, it's awesome.
That it comes down to not really being a religious thing at all. It's a science thing. And you have your shitty, mad scientist.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, worse than trying to play God, he's trying to play God's will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so doesn't even have the personal responsibility of playing God.
Someone once described the idea of like fighting a holy war as being like kind of stupid. Cause that's sort of you saying like, I know God wants this, but I think God needs me to do it for him, which is sort of like being a fan of like Van Halen and jumping on stage and snatching a guitar and be like, don't worry, Eddie, I got this. Like, that's not what you do. If you think something's awesome and can do everything, you let that thing take care of shit. And like, they're very much like, well, sure, this is bound to happen. That says so in the Bible, but what if we want it to happen right now? Like, it just doesn't make a lick of sense. It's perfect.
And also just the idea of God will stop you if he doesn't want you to do it is definitely a little suspect on the dogma scale.
I was actually, it was so funny you say Simpsons, Matt, because I was actually thinking it reminded me of that thing where they do the send up of No Country for Old Men, and you know, and he's like, call it friendo, and Homer's like, heads, tails, lands on its side, and then the coin goes dunk, and then lands on its side, and he goes, you got it this time, and walks out.
So there's another episode of The Simpsons where Homer's like, all right, God, if you don't want me to eat this last piece of cake, please give me absolutely no sign. That will be done. Just eats the cake. And it's like, they're essentially doing that.
Well, it's just, and it really, what's beautiful about it is without getting into a big, long sermon, it's like, it does kind of speak a little bit to, like, it's a macro level Jonestown thing, right? I mean, like, it's kind of like, it's like on a micro level, oh, we're gonna bring about this thing, and it's sort of like, no you're not, just for starters, you're not. But like this idea that like, oh, we're just gonna do this thing scientifically and it's gonna bring about this great biblical whatever, and it's sort of like, this has not been peer reviewed, motherfucker, like go talk to anybody else. And they're going like, and it goes right back to that B level, like absolutely Bava level setup of the thing with the damn nail. It was like, I just, when they did that, I mean, I don't want to laugh out, like, you know, whatever. I was like, oh my God, that is so great. Cause it's like, I just picture these guys like, oh, it's just a real relic from when they put the lost cat side up and Christ and the thing in the water. And it's just sort of like, and just, meanwhile, you get Giuseppe back in the back, like dipping like old railroad ties, like in ground beef for a little bit of a time, running around the dirt and be like, bam.
Well, and you evidence. Can see their like just inane grasp of all this. Cause like one, how many fake relics are there? Right. Well, some might say all, but like we've got one of the real nails from the crucifixion, and the guy has it in like a glass case and then puts on like white gloves to take it out. And I'm like, even if you think you're not contaminating by putting those gloves on, which already not true.
Yeah.
That thing is 2000 years old by the time it got handed. Do you think everyone wore gloves from the time they first got it? Like, of course not. That's got like 8 billion dudes' DNA all over it. Hopefully only blood and sweat. Like, it's just insane. Like, oh, it turns out everybody looks a lot like Father whatever that works in the DNA lab.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's one of those things.
I didn't see a lot of hair nets.
If that thing was smuggled across a few of those borders a few times, it was smuggled. So, you know, it just sort of like, but it was just one of those things. Like, I just, my internal little weirdo was just cheering like crazy because that setup is just gloriously stupid and nuts. And it's like, but in the context of like within a convent, within a place away from home, away from home, it's like all of a sudden you are like contained by crazy. Like, you can't. Like, it's not like it's just happened like in her hometown. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like in LA. It was like, it's just remove or whatever else. And it's sort of like, and that adds an interesting dynamic, which
there's
is,
no word for her to run out and be like, it's made of people. Cause like everyone also agrees it is. That's good. We're trying to do that. Like this is worth mentioning too. This is the exact kind of shit that would infuriate me in a different movie, that it's just such a stupid idea. You know, like I can totally hear myself picking this apart and going, that's so dumb. And like all the things that we're thinking are awesome and hilarious right now would ruin a different movie, but it works in this case. And I think that's just important for me to point out for my own humility later when I probably do this exact same thing in the shitty way. But,
if this movie had, if it was clear that that they were right, that that is the blood of Christ and they're going to make a new Messiah, that would be insufferable. That would
For sure.
If it was, you know, a demon instead, like, that kind of sucks. But the idea that they made some monstrosity that they thought they were cobbling together out of savior DNA, like, and violated this woman and her autonomy, like, that is a cool idea. Like, that actually works. But it does signal, once we get to that point, the just the changing of the guard for this movie. Because we start with creepy religious thing, down to the, like the nuns with the red cloths on their faces and the lying down with the arms out, face down, that we've seen in a couple of nun movies now. Do nuns do that? Because it's creepy. It's like the nun equivalent of the flagellation. You know, they're like, phoom, thank you, me, may have another, you know. But and then once we find out what's happening with the relic, then it is a thrill ride, survival revenge thing. And it's really hinged in the middle at this, you know, Christ Jurassic Park kind of.
I'm so glad you said that, Josh, because in my head, that was one of the things I actually wrote down on my phone after the thing. It's like, and there you go. Save your DNA.
Let's hope Jesus doesn't know how to open doorknobs. Well, he wouldn't. They only had latches back then.
So. I mean, the amount of one inappropriate joke after another just come flooding in. You're just like, oh my god.
So, by way of saying, like, I think this movie by and large works, and it's amazing that it does because it is those two things hinged in the middle. But I think it allows us to avoid having the just bog standard exorcism or, you know, demon baby plot, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and then also too, they've been making these movies recently, and I want them to keep making them where you give a female character, and you know, Rosemary's Baby, but Rosemary has agency is such a perfect way of saying it. Like, there's been movies the last few years where you give a female character, you present them with, this is the way the things are done, and this is how it's foretold, and she's like, no. And then it's just sort of like, and I think of Ready or Not with Samara Weaving,
right?
And like how she just fucking just, you know, I'm getting out of this nonsense with your stupid traditions. You all are crazy. And it's like, and I really dig that because it doesn't turn into John McClane so much as it just is like, it's like, no, I'm going to fight for my ability to be my own person. God damn it. And it's like, and that's, and this is more religious, obviously, than Ready or Not, you know, for sure. But it's that same energy of like, of a female character sort of not being defined by the ability to like work the game or like kind of like make it out on a technicality. It's sort of like, no, like I 10,000% am fighting for my ability to stand on my own 2 feet and not be forced into some nonsense thing. In this case, a crazy nonsense thing. And that's, there's a type of way that these things are written that feels kind of, I hate saying it this way, but like new in a way. And like, it feels kind of like a fresh way of treating a female character in this kind of a role. And I just, I dig that. I really dig that. I'm so glad that it was like, she is an active participant in her own fate against the backdrop of this nonsense.
I do like that she doesn't necessarily lose her faith in God, but just in the people.
Yeah, she sees those as separate things. Yeah.
She sees the mechanisms of control, and she's like, you can't. No, God wouldn't want you to take over my body and put a baby in it. And I'm you know, I'm a staunch Catholic, but I'll be fucked if I'm going to bring this monstrosity into the world. Like, what was the matter with you?
And that's a great point, Joshua. That's a really good point. I'm really glad you said that, because I'd kind of forgotten that was a part of it. That wasn't just sort of like, oh, all this stuff is a delusion. Like, I still believe in the delusion, just not your version of it.
Yeah, it's just like, no, this is just a straight up goofy cult. Like, this does not speak to her faith at large, which is a much subtler and kinder point for the movie to make, which I think is smart.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I think the ending that everyone is so shocked about, it's funny because the rest of the movie does not blink with the gore. Like, they give us the full Pan's Labyrinth, you know, with the head smash or the tongue cut. They do not cut away from
shit.
It's
very sallow, yeah.
Yeah. And they absolutely do not show her killing the creepy baby with a rock.
Yeah,
it's just a little bit off screen. That's like the one time
they blink. Yeah,
yeah, we get some blood splatter. I was like, I guess like people are very uncomfortable with that idea, but I think that's great that it wasn't like as soon as she sees the baby, her maternal instincts kick in, and it may be a monster, but it's mine. And it's like, no, it was just like, I didn't ask for this.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna have it. And fuck off. And just the screaming at the camera. Yes.
It's pretty intense.
And that reminded me too. I don't know if you guys had this. Of course, Matt, when you were in the theater, it was like, so like a few people, but like mine was the week before, I think. And it was full. It was a smaller theater. It was full. It was Alamo. It's kind of what you expect. Oh, sure, it was, you know, it's full. And what was wild was that when she, the sound, the background, there's room tone, but like the background sound cuts out really. And it's just, all you get is her, like the heavy, hard breathing, and then just the scream and just a closer and closer, and the camera's moving around a little bit. And it's like, and then it just hits that crescendo, and you have 1,000, 2,000, and then, and it's just sort of like, and you hear some nervousness in the theater, and it reminded me a little bit, and I'm not going to give him a lot of credit because I have a lot of issues with him, but with Ari Aster's deal in Midsommar, where that scene where Florence Pugh is like doing that breathing thing with them, and they're doing that thing, and it's like, I remember that feeling in the theater with that one too, where people are kind of uncomfortable. And like, they don't know what to do themselves, because they go, they feel sort of to do themselves. But if you go and watch, which I recommend everybody does, watch the documentary that Flair Denise did about folklore, and like how those type of things really tie into majorly kind of old world, kind of pagany old god type of shit. And it's sort of like, so for them to highlight this and this, if this was done in that Van Helsing kind of way, it would have been zoom cuts and things and dramatic music and blah, 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 blah. But you cut all of those little safety blankets away, and then you're just given this crazy raw moment. And it's like, and that's neat, because you know, this movie didn't make $500 million box office. It wasn't this huge gigantic international thing, but little unflinching creative moments like that, like those things last. Yeah. Like those things have weight to them, and because they're hard decisions, because when you make an audience uncomfortable in that way, like, yeah, you know, I don't know. Yeah, like it's tough. It's you know, you can kind of get lost in the sauce a little bit. But I just like, that I dug. Like, there's definitely moments in that second half where I just was like, it's like, oh, I am just dialed into these creative decisions that you all are making. Like, awesome. Yeah, well done. And I honestly kind of thought, I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I kind of thought this should have been longer.
It does fly by. But at the same time, like, there's no fat on this. Like, it's lean and mean and engrossing. So maybe, I don't know. Like, I was really happy with what I got. I would rather leave wanting more, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty cool world to live in.
I mean, I just kept thinking, I guess part I was thinking of, and this is not fair to this movie, but I just kept thinking, I've made this point with a few people with this stuff that's come up recently, where like, I think about like, well, also with The First Omen too, but I think about Anything for Jackson, and like how from about 35 minutes in, nearly to the end, it's so unbelievably bleak and dark, and you don't have a lot of moments to even catch your damn breath before you just get nailed with a 2x4 of what they're doing with the thing. Similarly to Where Evil Lurks, where you're just sort of like, or Baskin was another one, where you're just sort of like, it's just like just beaten into the ground with this, this isn't that extreme in the way of like, oh, isn't this shocking? But more just sort of like, it's just this ever-present thing. And I just kept thinking, like, once you hit that, once you hit the souvenir shop kind of turn, and then you get into this kind of breakneck kind of survival thing, I almost think that you could even, that whole bit could have been longer, where there's some like, even kind of fake moments of respite or whatever else, and then it just then more lunacy happens. Like I almost like what's that one? What's the I can't think of the director, but the church, the Italian, the Jello, oh, the church.
The Bava.
I think it was Bobby or Rob, not Rob. I can't. Well, anyway, it's too late.
Really bonkers.
Spielberg.
And like where they just keep just throwing spaghetti at the wall, and it's just sort of like. And so I almost wonder if like if it could have had more, you know, kind of just more of those type of decisions, just sort of like just thrown into this thing. I don't think it suffers because it doesn't have it. I just, you know, just when we finally hit that point at the end, I'm like, man, I just. Like, you know, so I say, mainly just because I really love, and I get that warm feeling when you have, when you see just some just severely creative decisions, just like, just being just ridden into the sunset. I love that kind of thing. I just, because I just want more of that, you know, more of the lunacy, more of those bold decisions, you know?
And I was glad to see that this was a $9 million budget. So it's already doubled its investment. Because I really want to see more mid to low budget movies that just are interesting and somebody is passionate about them, and then they can be a moderate success and that's enough.
Well, that's for years. Yeah, that's Kevin fine. Smith that's said good. That was how the secret to how he got to keep making movies is like everything was made for like $20 million or less and would make about double. And that's just enough for them to go, yeah, sure, whatever, go do what you do. And like they'd kind of leave him alone. And like, I'd love to see that become more of a rule as people are either spending a small country's GDP on a movie or they're just not making it because they don't think it'll be worth making a movie on a small country's GDP for a budget. And like, yeah, make this little stuff, man. Like if you want to convince people that you're not just beholden to your shareholders, you could crank out a lot of lower budget stuff like this and not really worry about losing money and then still put all your eggs in that one stupid, stupid basket.
Well, and that's kind of the passion part of it.
Still be able to argue that you're out there for the art, you know.
Well, that's kind of, and also just look at the way that she was promoting this, and look at the way that look at all the loony stuff that they were doing, where she's showing up at screenings and like me doing screenings for people in the church and all those other kinds of stuff, and it was like, and there was a lot of pride there, and I was like, that's dope, man. Like, I will take that any day of the week over some over manufactured, you know, bit of fluffy nonsense that doesn't mean anything. Like it's just like, and that comes from having a level of investment and care and pride in what you're doing. Like, it's a really palatable, cool ass thing. And like, I ain't gonna throw anybody in the bus, but there's a lot of people that could take a lesson from the idea of like we're all just people who put your pants on one leg at a time. Like, you know, you're not special.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that story.
What an idiot! I love that, but what an idiot!
But it's like, there's a lesson to be learned there. Like, you know, if you're whatever the thing is that you or you're doing, like, if there's that level of investment or whatever, it's like the what's it? Rick Rubin has that line about that thing about like if you're making art for the consumer, then you're gonna run out of steam. You're gonna give up. You're gonna get disillusioned. When you're making art for your own reasons, the audience will come to you, or the audience won't come to you, or a different audience will come to you. But then you're the one making the thing. You're the one making it for you. You are the artist. You're the audience. You're the artist. And like, I think there's a lot of truth to that kind of thing. And so when you have somebody stand up and be like, "Fuck yes, we made this crazy thing," and it's like, absolutely, like that's what does it, you know. And there's a reason you get a new
social media post from Ryan Reynolds, either as Deadpool or with Hugh Jackman, or talking about Deadpool constantly, because he cares about that more than anything else in his fucking life, as far as I can tell. Like, you know, that one happens to be a big budget monster, but like, that's because he doggedly for 10, 15 years pursued the idea of that being a thing, you know. And like, you can see movies where people are doing the rounds they have to do, and then a year after it's come out, when they're on a podcast interview, they're like, "Oh God, yeah, we knew that was trash before we even started." You know, I don't think she'll ever talk shit about this movie. Like, she likes it now, she'll like it forever, I would assume. she might like not like part of the experience or be disappointed with box office or something, but like, if you believe in it, you'll continuously go, yeah, I wanted that. I might be disappointed in results, but I wanted it. Instead of like, yeah, I bought a house, which again, I don't fault anyone for. I too like living places, but you know, like it's nice when you see someone go out of the way.
David Cross,
who was like, I just told that story at work. Yeah.
People said they just couldn't believe that I was in the Chipmunks movies. And I was like, well, you know what? I tried to pay my mortgage with my indie cred and I couldn't.
Yep.
So
Squeakquel, here I come.
Well, that was the, yeah, actually just one last super last little thing. Cause you mentioned Ryan Reynolds with Deadpool, like then they worked on that for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it was even by standards, like what the budget they had for the first one, whatever else, and the content and the R rating, all this stuff. Like, there was a lot of gambles that kind of put on the line. And I was thinking about him and Rob McElhenney in relation to Wrexham.
Yeah,
because I mean, we love it so dearly and it's so beautiful. And it's like, I highly, highly recommend that to anybody. That series is, if you have any soft spot in your heart at all for human interesty things, it's so beautiful and pure and decent and honest and grounded and lovely. But what I love about how that story has gone, and if people don't know, it's Rob McElhenney from Always Sunny and Ryan Reynolds from the third Blade movie. They got together and bought a fourth tier soccer team in Wales. And they were like, this is going to be neat. And then it was like, then they realized that the town is a really fucking solid, salt-of-the-earth, Steinbeckian place with really decent people. But there's a lot of toughness to a lot of this kind of stuff. And there's a lot of lessons, a lot of stuff you can't take for granted. You got to really be invested in to watch these two dudes, who I would estimate are decent dudes, to watch them just have their whole worldview kind of tilted because of like the weight of what things actually fucking are on Earth, on the ground, not up in the sky, not the publicist spin, like the way that the ground is, and watching them take just severe emotional ownership of that over the course of Wrexham is just a goddamn beautiful thing. And I just think there's a lesson in that kind of stuff. Like, and you know, ultimately you can go like, now I'm invested. But at the same time, you got to get sponsors on the jerseys because you can't be losing $3 million a year because you can't. You know, there's a balance there. And so, and there's a lot of integrity to that too. So, you know, I don't know. I'm going to go on about this forever. We can touch on other ones real fast, but like just looking at somebody standing out in front of a thing, and then everybody knows the story now about how she auditioned for this and didn't get it. And then it kind of didn't get moved forward. And then several years later, she's got a lot more hoofed, comes back, buys the rights, gets some stuff reworked, gets on as a producer and like kind of moves some stuff through. And she even talks about like Madam Web. Oh, everybody shits on Madam Web, right? She's like, no, that helped me get my relationship with Sony.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, that's how this shit goes.
Get in the room and shake the right hands. Like that all.
Yeah. And it's like, and that's not hustle. That's not insincerity. That's not whatever. That's just sort of like, you recognize here's the thing I want to get. Here's the thing I want to do. I'm going to go get it. You know, fucking ask Emma Stone about how what the process of getting connected with Yorgos Lanthimos. You know, I mean, this shit happens by accident. It comes from hard work and integrity. It doesn't come from a bunch of flaff and fluff. Like, that's not how this shit works. So God bless her for putting her neck out and making this bonky thing. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, I think this succeeds and is super fun to watch. I do feel like the tone's shift is a little jarring as you go through it. And like, the more you think about it, the more you like it, but it is weird to just take a left turn like that, but at least the plane lands in a reasonable way. So yeah, I was pretty impressed with this. I would say it's like a 8.5 out of 10, late term abortions.
Fourth trimester.
They're executing them after the birth.
Right. This is a movie I had to kind of be dragged kicking and screaming to by my two cohorts here. But I'm ever so glad I did. See, there's your reason to appreciate Easter as a holiday. It gives you a chance to see three movies in a row at a theater and take a chance on one. This was like a weird kind of hidden gem, which is a weird thing to say about a current movie that's in theaters, but like, it was just something that was like easy to overlook. I think the it just has a look of so much of what we've seen lately with like 8 billion exorcism movies and a lot of, you know, this religious horror is kind of a weird thing, right? It kind of works for some people, doesn't work for others. I'm pretty hit and miss with it. And this one just didn't strike me as particularly interesting. Maybe just didn't have a trailer that sold it well enough, but goddamn, I was hooked from like within a few minutes of this thing going. Like once you kind of get a grip on who this character is and you're like, oh, there's something different about how all this works. And the way it all plays out was really satisfying. So, yeah, this will be another one. I say this a lot lately. Another one that I'll be happy to recommend to people because odds are it got, you know, missed by a good hunk of our audience because it, you know, was not a big splash and didn't get all the buzz in the world. But yeah, I'll give this like a 9 out of 10. Once its head comes into view, hit it with the rock.
Yeah, the
you won't get that joke if you're from Guam. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's different cultural touchstones. I guess it would be the way that. Yeah, no, I mean, I enjoyed this. I thought it was very solid. Yeah, I did want more. I did want even more lunacy, but I mean, I don't know that that's fair because I mean, ultimately, like the balance of this. I don't know what the original script looked like, but it makes me wonder like what, mm-hmm. you know, what was to be reworked. And it makes me think, and Matt, you said the phrase, you kind of lean and mean kind of a thing. That's like, if there's not a lot of fat there, like there, maybe there were some things that were there that just didn't necessarily need to be there per se. And so they go, okay, well, you're just really streamlining it, you know? And much like, you know, the one I kept thinking about was Ready or Not. It was like, once you hit that point and then you just, it's just fucking survive. In some ways, sometimes you get a You're Next, and I love You're Next, absolutely, 10,000%. Charney's great, and everything's great. The thing I fucking love that kind of thing, but this is a different kind of a survival, the Ready or Not type of thing, and this one is a different kind of a thing, and it's speaking, even giving me more agency. That's not John McClane agency. It's just sort of like I have my own identity, I can make my own fucking decisions agency, and it's like I love that it's not even preachy. It's just like it's just at its core, and I dig that. So I just wanted more. I just wanted more from it, from even more than what they gave us, which, you know, maybe normal people, I was like, oh, it's plenty. So, I mean, I'm going to go a little lower, but just out of no animosity whatsoever. It's so I'm going to say 8. I'm going to say 8 out of 10. Everybody knows when you're staging a medical emergency and you're using a chicken, you got to check for feathers. You got to check for feathers. Everybody knows this. It buys you time. Feathers buys you time. No feathers, more time. Feathers, less time. Everybody knows this. Out of 10.
That was a finger licking good escape attempt, I felt like.
Okay,
we'll take a quick break then, and we'll talk about our three other movies, and we'll do it fast, I promise. Okay, so first up, let's talk quickly about Come True, or Ser Realizada. I don't even care, because look...
Can I ask you right up front, Josh? You said something in the text message, and I didn't understand because I'm an old person. Like you said something about either a creepypasta or like a meme format or a something related to this, and I was so baffled by that, and I didn't know what that meant. So who are you talking about?
Well, yeah, we'll get there, but
I just didn't want to forget to ask you because like I was so confused. Yeah,
I think we should. I could say first up, like. This movie ends on a meme, and it's a meme that predates this movie. And it's just a text post that I had seen on Reddit and various other spots. So like, you know, creepypasta is just a, you know, series of words that someone would copy and paste, you know, into something to creep somebody out. And it is the text that's on the screen of that girl's phone.
Oh, really?
Is the you? If you are reading this, you have been in a coma for 20 years, and we are still trying to reach you, and we don't know if this message will get through. Please wake up.
Hmm. Oh, weird. And I guess, like, I've somehow managed to never see that.
Oh my god! So when that hits,
that would I can see how now why you were so like, what the fuck?
It is okay. Just like somebody just farting in your face. to end a movie like that.
So I can see it now. So that makes more sense now, because like, I just did not, and it wasn't not out of disrespect, but I just didn't understand. Because when I got to the end of it, I'm like, this had some negatives, a few positives, but man, Josh, really, that really bugged him. Like,
I didn't quite get the level of your ire. Now
I get it. Yeah, now I understand. But I just, like I said, I just was so baffled. what's going on?
Okay.
Like, she could have turned to the camera and went, "Well, that's my mama," and it would not have been as disappointing. Like, this starts off with a really cool idea where we have the kind of the girl who's having creepy dreams, and I love the idea of her being a runaway who sneaks back into her house.
Yeah.
And even will like sleep there, but that, you know, and go to school and shit, but just during, you know, whenever her mom's around, she's makes herself scarce.
I find this actress particularly compelling too.
She is super good.
She's really watchable and does so. She's got a bit of a like Jodie Foster vibe for me, where she does a lot by not doing much and is just willing to just sort of like let stuff breathe. And it adds this, like, a lot is done with like a twitch of an eyebrow or creasing of the forehead. And I thought that she's just fascinating to me. Anyway.
Yeah, so she's this kind of quiet, you know, androgynous kid. There's clearly some trauma going on. Turns out that there are a lot of people sharing the same dream space as her, and they're having she's taking part in a dream study, which may be like more sinister than we think. She's gets kind of stalked by one of the guys who runs the program, and then like falls in love with him. And then the movie just falls the fuck apart.
Yeah, the third act does not do this movie any favors.
And we're clipping along. We got this really cool dream imagery. Like, I've never seen dreams visualized that way before.
So cool. Yeah.
That cool idea that they're getting a very low-res image of what's going on in the people's mind. And we get to see the high-res to low-res. Like, all of that is just kicking ass. And I really wish that they would have cared enough about this movie to fucking finish it, because it really seems like you get to that point right when she has sex with him.
Yeah.
Then suddenly it's just nonsensical for a little bit. And then it's just that ending, which is, you know, just sticking your thumb up your own ass and somehow having it come out your mouth.
And failing to pull.
It's really frustrating. Like, you know me, like the more that I'm invested in a movie, the more frustrated I am when it doesn't seem like it is invested in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just can't imagine somebody writing the last 20 minutes of this movie and being satisfied and going, yes, this was my vision. It was always leading to this thing that I copy pasted off of Reddit 10 years ago. It's like, Jesus fuck. It's like there's so much good going on with this that I hated it all the more that it fell apart. So somebody else can talk about it, because that's all I've got. It's like, what the fuck? This kind of makes High Tension less awful in retrospect, but barely.
Damn, that's big.
Well, what did
you
think,
Charlie? Because like, I watched this before you guys and suggested we watch it because I loved the first most of it. And then kind of agree on the ending, just not with as much vitriol, but I wanted to see what you guys thought of it. So Charlie, what did you think of it?
Yeah, it made some interesting creative decisions for sure. Yeah, the dreamscapes. I kept, honestly, like to their credit, I oftentimes was distracted mainly just by being like, how'd they pull that off? Because like they don't think they had millions upon millions upon millions of dollars to make this movie. Like, but I'm very impressed with like how they were able to get this to look this way, and like the way there's a really assured thing with the way the camera would move through these spaces and not seeing the seams. You're not seeing, I don't know. There was just like, it was very creative and interesting. And as it was going along and as things are getting more like kind of heavy, I was like, okay, is it this thing where the guy with the glasses, there's some sinister thing behind, like they're actually pumping this shit into these people and to some end of some kind. And like, you know, like it's a reverse osmosis situation. And that's what they're doing. Like, okay. Like, oh, let's see how this plays out or whatever else. But yeah, after she's like softens on him ever so slightly, that you know, and that was a little bit clunky, which, I mean, I don't know if I've ever said this, when we've talked about these things, one of my biggest movie pet peeves, or at least in the top five anyway, is when you have like two characters and it's like, they like look at each other in a bar and they go like, hey, and then it cuts to like them like ripping each other's clothes off. I'm like, no. That's not the interesting thing. Getting it to that point, that's the interesting thing. And like, don't give me a hey. I fucking can't stand that. It drives me nuts. And so like in this thing, it was sort of like, it kind of seemed like once it hit that point, then it was just like trying to push sand up a hill. It was just like, it still seemed like it had some ideas, but it was just all over the map. And then like, then it became infinitely less interesting. Cause yeah, I mean, without having that trigger point, as Josh describes, like, it still was pretty, I kind of found that part of it just super disappointing. Cause it was like, okay, I was thinking it was some big sinister, almost Cronenbergian type of a thing. And like, it just kind of comes off like kind of like a wah kind of a thing. And so it's sort of like, I didn't have the same reaction that Josh did, but I still was kind of like, the whole third act, I was just sort of like, okay, I'm all over the map here. Like, what the, like, we got to nail something to the ground and like, let's get a little bit of foundation here. And it just seemed like they was like either a rush to get to the ending or like a unfocused idea or maybe the scale of it or whatever. But it just kind of, it became very, very disjointed in that last bit. And so, yeah, I would be super curious, given, you know, Josh, what you described about this thing, this kind of Reddit creepypasta thing, like, how does that really play in? Because I don't know that if you watch this, you would make the argument, if you knew that, to go back and watch the rest of the movie and go like, oh, well, this is very, very much integrated into the very strong DNA of this thing all the way through.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a fib. It's like watching that Spiral movie that Chris Rock did. Like, that was like, you go like, oh, that's a Saw movie. Like, not really. It's a serial killer movie that they put Jigsaw into.
Yeah, like a Ladder Hellraiser sequel.
Yeah, it's like a C-minus serial killer script that they put Jigsaw into, period, the end. And so, like, this kind of doesn't seem too dissimilar from that in that respect, because that last part of the last act just does not jive with a lot of the rest of the movie. And like, so yeah, I mean, I'd have the same takeaway that Josh did, but like, I don't know, it's just like, I kind of just kept going like, really, that's what we're doing? Like, I mean, I even rewound back 10 minutes 10 12 minutes or so, like, I just like, wait, did I look away for a minute, or like, did I take a sip of my water, or what? Well, I must have,
and did something. I fall asleep, because now she, like, he was dreaming about having sex with her, and then they both had fangs. Yeah. And then instead of her being appalled at seeing that dream, she's like, oh, that just makes me want you somehow, creepy, soft-voiced pedophile man. And then they end up sleeping together, and then she's like bouncing around, and the next morning, and then she like gets the message on her phone, and then she turns to the camera and has fangs. And you just go, well, yeah, that's a good visual, but what? And then they showed the screenshot, and I was like, oh, dear. Even worse, I read a little bit of an interview with the director, and it was exactly what I didn't want him to say, which was, you know, if you think about it, what I was really doing is I wanted you, the viewer, to think that that note was for you. And not like in the context of the film, like
that sounds like some post hoc rationalization about
you. Like, did that blow your fucking mind? It's like, no, end your fucking movie.
Yeah. Well, I think,
oh my God.
So like, I brought this to the table because I really loved the like dreamscapes that they gave us. I was like, that shit's creepy and awesome. And then I liked that they're playing with the sleep paralysis thing, which we've seen in a few movies. I thought this, like, as someone that's like, had that, have we all had that, did we? I can't remember what we said.
I haven't, but yeah,
okay, but like this hewed very close to like my experience with it. I was like, oh shit, this is really unsettling because this is very familiar. And then even though you can kind of tell as they're about to get to it that like part of the sleep study is like, okay, we're going to keep these people under to try to confirm that these things are some kind of real thing, not just something your brain conjures. And the payoff for that is two people having sleep paralysis in the same room see the thing in the same position in the room. I'm like, that's fucking creepy. That got like the hairs on my arm.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, this movie rules.
That whole bit is great. Yeah.
Yeah, and like, so I'm 100% bought in. And then you get to the end, as exactly as you guys described it. And because I didn't realize that this is like a referenced thing, like an internet meme, I was just like, oh shit, they didn't know how to end their movie. So they just kind of farted out. It was all a dream, so nothing has to make sense. And I was like, oh shit, like that, fine, but that's not interesting. And so I was just like, okay, it shits the bed in like the last act, but there's so much good shit there that I'm like, fuck, I like parts of things, I guess. And I really love so much of what this is. I'm like, God damn, like, ugh. And so, and partly too, because I was just like, this can't have ended the way I thought. And now like knowing it's a reference, like, okay, that does confirm it is just dumb, but fuck, it's so good. So like, I don't know if there's like a highlight reel of this on the YouTubes or whatever, but like that alone, I think is like worth checking out, like the dream sequence shit. It's fucking cool and creepy, and like bits of that would stack together to make a nice little short film. But yeah, the feature really pulls the rug out from under you because it just, I think, runs out of ideas. So it quite literally copies and pastes an idea from somewhere else.
Did I blow and that's your a mind?
Yeah,
man.
So that's too bad. But we should wrap on this one. I think we've.
I wonder if the Venn diagram of massage therapists and indie filmmakers is. Because in the middle of the middle sliver is just, doesn't this feel so good right now? Anyway.
No, don't say that. It's weird.
And when the optometrist got married and they said, do you take her for better or worse? Better.
Better
or worse? Or worse.
Better.
Such a bad joke.
Anyway, because I really liked the first bit of this, I will rate it a little bit higher. And because I can't think about the first bit of it without going, oh, right, it's fucking terrible. I won't give it that many more points. That's just how I got to be. I got to be me. So this is like 3 out of 10. Would rather listen to REM a little than go through REM sleep with these dudes.
Yowza. I'll be a little more generous and I'll give it, I'll give it 5 out of 10. I don't know. Dream theaters. All 5 of those points happen in the first 2 acts of the movie. So you could just watch that and then turn it off and be like, ah, yes. And they all lived happily ever after, devolving into madness. The end.
I guess the true hypnic jerk in this movie is the screenwriter.
Which I believe is also the director, which is also the producer, which is also, it's like, this is pretty much all one dude's baby. Anthony
Sometimes
Scott
you get Moonlit Garden. Sometimes you get this.
Yeah. Directed, screenplay, story, cinematography, editor. It's all
weird that in the credits it says story such as it is.
Yeah.
They just put that out there. Anyway, sorry, Charlie. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, I would say on the overall, I would just say, you know, it's just, it has a lot of really cool creative decisions early on. And, you know, sometimes, and I've, to great amusement, Josh will say, you know, like I'm choosing to say, just like to move the end part. Like I summarily reject it. And like, you know, because I just didn't have the same touch point, it was like, I was just more just disappointed at the end for a different reason. But I think they had a lot going for it and there's some really bold and cool things that they did. I have to say, I mean, even getting in before the third act, I was starting to run out of steam a little bit. Where I just was kind of like I want a little more clarity to it. And then just sort of like, then you have, you know, guy with glasses who is always sweaty and they don't explain what the temperature is. Like, not that they have to, like, every movie goes like, well, no, it's August and it's this, that, whatever else. But like, it was just weird that he was just sweaty for some reason. I was like, that would just distract me to no end. So I can't tell you why it distracted me. It just really bugged me. So I mean, like, there's a lot going in the first part of it. I just feel like they were the dog that caught up to the car and we're like, now what the hell should I do with this bumper? Like, it was that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I'll kind of be in the middle. I'm going to think I'm going to say 4 out of 10, Tron-E sleep jumpers.
There you go.
I love when the one guy goes like, I have to wear this thing? And then there's like, yeah, our costume lady worked really hard on that.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to get pleats like that?
And boy, are they fortunate that everyone in that sleep study sleeps like a fucking vampire in a coffin.
Yeah, I kept thinking about that. Yeah, because yeah, like it was actually funny to say that, man. Because like in my household, like where you place me, that is where you will find me. Like I don't. Yeah. I sleep very much like a pile of wood, whereas like Kristen just sort of like Kristen is a cha-cha real smooth kind of dance sleeper where she's all over the place, upward, side, but down, back and up, and this way, that way. And unfortunately, our daughter got more of that than of my genetics.
Well, all little kids are dervishes.
Well, yes, yeah. but I was just like, damn it, why could she sleep like me? I just sleep in a pile. I just one spot. Boom. That's it. And it's like, no, dance. Because we watch her on the monitor, and at some point you look at me like, yep, she's perpendicular. She's got one leg sticking out this way. She's got one arm in this direction. You're like, God damn it. Fucking thing. But I'll say 4 out of 10. 4 out of 10, yeah, Tronny sleep jumpers.
Sleep jumper. Anyway, so let's go from one kind of soft-voiced creepy man to the next, if you want to, and we'll just go into You'll Never Find Me, or Nunca Vas a Descubrirme.
We had a different experience with this one, I think, because I like this quite a bit.
Really? Huh.
Yeah.
This is always the kind of movie that I want to see done well, and I don't quite think this one is. So you have like the young woman in distress knocks on the door of this guy's mobile home, and he's, you know, clearly a hermit who doesn't get out much, doesn't talk to people much. She is not stupid enough to trust him, and he is not stupid enough to trust her. And so you have a really nice setup where you don't know which one of them is the danger, and they get to play with that. Like one of them is lying, and then the other one might be lying. And it, you get kind of a cat and mouse thing, but to me, just the energy of this was too low.
So glacially paced.
And to me, it just like
civilizations rose and fell while I watched this movie.
The guy is always speaking in a very quiet kind of monotone.
Yeah.
No matter what he says. And when we get the first of his little monologues, I was like, okay. Because it was like after we finished the movie, Jess and I, and we were going to bed, I was like, it's time. It's time to lie down. Lie down in the dark, because the dark is where I live. One time I put my hand in the stove just to see how it felt, but the stove was off and it was dark. And I like the dark. And just like every fucking thing this guy says could be said by like Batman sitting on a gargoyle.
Yeah.
Or like
the 13-year-old writing poetry. Sin City.
Or like the Crow, you know, like if you read the graphic novel of The Crow, it is a very sincere and emotional and raw thing. Yeah. But it's also very poorly written, right? Because he was like 16. But so that was where I was with this. Like, oh my God, the things these people say to each other. And they just keep going and going and going. So by the time they get to the, ooh, here's some dangers creeping in, you don't know. I was just not invested. So I just couldn't get into it. I feel like it's 100 minutes. It could have been 85. Could have cut. It's another one of those where I feel like you could have cut half of the reaction shots between the two of them. But yeah, and then once they tip the hand, it's more soliloquies.
Yeah.
You're just like, and then there was a girl. She asked me for a packet of crisps. And I said, would you like barbecue? And she said, no, I would prefer ranch, because at night on a ranch it's dark and I like the dark. And I'm like, fuck you. So, you know, I didn't end up being mad at this, but I just really could not get invested in it. So I'm very interested to hear how it.
Yeah, I want to hear your take on it, Charlie. I'm curious.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. I just I'm I, you know, and I am the very first person to admit that anymore these days, like, I have, even with things I'm enjoying the level of shit out of, I have a hard time staying awake at, because, you know, work days are long and life is, has a lot of demands. And, like, you know, oftentimes I'm like, the will is there, but I will just, I mean, like, I fucking fell asleep watching Fallout. Like, it was like, and I was so enjoying the, I was loving shit out of it, and I still am. It's great. Yeah. But I nodded off. Like, and I was like, thankfully, it woke up when I woke up at the early morning hours. It had gotten to, because it kept doing autoplay, right? So I got to like the eighth episode, but it was like, in a, like, it was a shot that didn't give anything away necessarily. I was like, I really quickly realized what was happening. I was like, oh, stop. And I was like, but it was, and it was enjoying that, and I fell asleep watching that. So, like, you know, I will certainly be the first person to admit that I can check out consciously and fall asleep pretty easily these days a lot of times, and it's kind of frustrating a lot of times. But like, I was really dialed into the thing, mainly because I kept thinking of the Wallace Shawn scene from Princess Bride. Like, but I put the boys in front of you. Like, I'll put it in front of myself. Yeah. Like, I'll put it in front of me. And it was like, I kept playing out that idea, like, oh, they're not going to just do a normal switcheroo where, you know, it seems like he's the menace, but she's the real threat. But like, that'd be too easy. So he'll be the threat. No, okay, but maybe she's the threat. And then Kristen sort of like was working on something. She's like, what if they both are? I'm like, oh, okay, well, oh, all right. Shit. And I was like, damn. And I was just like, and so I was like, and so, but it, a part of it was like, I just, like, I was really dialed into listening to little nuances of words where, like, it was like, okay, you know, as Josh said perfectly, like, neither one of them early on are like dumb enough to just blindly trust the other one. And like, which I thought was great. And then there's just these little bits where she'll give a tiny little bit, or he gave a little tiny little bit, or then there's a little bit of some just little word work that was in there. And like, I was just really dialed in on all that kind of stuff. And then as it kind of went along.
Oh, just in addition to being smart enough to have them not trust each other, it's smart enough to have them not make a dumb mistake, right? Like early on.
Yeah.
So that they keep doing the, like, I want to leave. Like, well, you can leave if you want to. No, I really want to leave. I want to leave right now. Anytime you want to go, just you're welcome to go. But it is dark out there. You know, it's like, it's the creepy version of Baby It's Cold Outside where you're just not sure.
Yeah.
But I repeat myself, but you're not sure whether he is very plausible deniability because he's doing everything right. And he's never like moving between her and the door or anything. He's just like, no, like, be cool. It's fine.
Well, that was the thing. I kept expecting, like, that was when, at that early stage, the first third of it, where it was like, at certain points, you're going like, oh, she's the threat because she's trying to buy, she's trying to get an investment, a buy-in of something. And like, it's like, oh, she's the one. And it's just like, but then he has one little turn of phrase where you're like, well, I don't know. And like, so I was really dialed in on that part of it. And then you get to the middle part where things get a little bit fuzzy. And then, yeah, as it kind of escalates and kind of winds outward, it's like, okay, well, he's, you know, the hand gets, you know, you say the hand gets kind of tipped or whatever. But what I liked about that whole transition to that part of it was like, I have a hard time a lot of times in a movie where they do the descent into madness thing. Cause like oftentimes it's like the same thing. It's like, oh, people took drugs and they're like, woo, jiboo, jiboo. And it goes on for way too long and it's obnoxious and annoying and grating and just sucks 9 times out of 10. And so like oftentimes descent into madness is the same shit where you're like, I just like, give me something to anchor down because I'm dizzy now and I'm annoyed. And like, and so I like that they didn't belabor that point too incredibly well. I think they kind of lost the plot a little bit in terms of some of the realizations they brought up. They got it back to sharp focus again, but it was like, there's a little bit there, but I'm like, I'm trying to keep up with who's saying what and who's doing whatever. And then I kind of figured out like what's maybe happened here is that like, he doesn't necessarily have like a guilt or a shame or a humanity the way that you would expect. But what's happened is he, through this level of kind of disconnected from realityness, he's accidentally started poisoning himself. And I was like, I think I figured this out, because he's having this argument with her before the hand gets tipped entirely. There's a level of defensiveness, there's a level of like argumentativeness, and there's a little bit of that part of it. And as you say, Josh, he's still not blocking the door. He's still not whatever. And there are certain points where I'm saying to the screen, I'm going like, it's like, lady, like, do you not realize that the threat could be outside of the trailer? Like, you know, he's just not saying it, but there's like a thing, and like, you know, you're going to think he's crazy, then you're going to run out, and then this thing's going to get you or whatever. Like, you're not getting that. And then 10 minutes later, like, oh, that's not a thing. But it's sort of like, and so that's when it's at its sharpest. But then at the transition point, it gets a bit muddled, and then it kind of comes back into focus again. And that's why I'm sort of like, okay, well, I think he's accidentally got him, basically been poisoning himself on this part of it, not realizing it. And it's just like, oh, I see what's at, I see what, where we're at here. And to then some of the camera work, hats off to these guys, the way that they moved around the small space. It reminded me a little bit of Jin, where like use a space to your advantage without seeming like just like a bunch of doofuses in the corner, like only moving the camera left to right. Like they did some great manipulation of the space, which I thought was really, really solid. And I really appreciated a lot of that stuff a great deal. Without getting too cutesy, it was just, I think really it was just a matter of like whether or not in that first half, if you were dialed in to what they're doing or not, or if the pulse was not to you're on the same pulse kind of beat, then yeah, I could see how it could just be a labor of endlessness. But I just was at a ball with it. Like,
if I think it is a combo though that I also wasn't as interested in the ending of like, this is really him kind of receiving his comeuppance in a way that could be supernatural or could be just himself like sabotaging himself. Like, I feel like it would have been way more interesting to me if it had been, if it had continued to be a cat and mouse between the two of them, and who knows which one is the cat and which one is the mouse. And maybe eventually, like, as cliche as it might sound, I think it would be groovy to just have it be the sister of his first victim.
And give it like a enough, hard candy ending. I kind of thought
like she looks enough like the sister that she's setting off his alarm bells, but she is there to kill him instead of like the way that this played out is Death of a Fawn. Like it's exactly what Death of a Fawn did. And it's, I don't know, that it just wasn't as interesting. And on top of a thing that already wasn't quite as interesting as I wanted it to be, and it didn't really close it for me. But like, I didn't end up angry with it. I was just disappointed. The classic dad move. So yeah, for me, it's like a 5.5 out of 10. A Pinot Grigio with a hint of roofie. That's delicious.
I'll go a little
detecting
lower.
Tones of roofie.
I'll give it a
roofie.
A 4 out of 10. Let's get you out of that wet sweater and into a dry martini. I think if you just had these people speak at a regular speed and not just stand around saying nothing with lots of meaningful looks, not to each other, mind you, but into the distance, like if I hadn't spent the whole time like leaning forward going like, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, say something, like, what the fuck? Like, I was so distracted by like, act like people or get out of there. You don't get to act both completely nutty and insane and get to exist in the same space without one of you calling out the other one for it to the point that you can't exist in that same space, or at least I could. And similar to that thing of the movie we watched the other day where like the demon or the god or the whatever under the hill shows up as like assistant for whatever for the party and never once speaks, and I'm like, there's only so long you can exist in a room with me without speaking before I'm going to call you on it. And this had that same thing. Yeah, this had that sort of that same thing of like, you can't both act weird and untrustworthy and be untrusting without one of you finally hitting a breaking point. And it makes sense in the fullness of time that like, oh, it's because it's not really happening, but that's just, it made the experience frustrating. And then retroactively going, oh, okay, I can kind of see how that had to play out because there was no other option because it wasn't real, but it didn't make the experience any less frustrating. So like, I liked the dialogue. I liked the fact that I flip-flopped on who I thought the problem was going to be, like who our, you know, aggressor might be. I liked the fact that the writing was sharp enough that like you would catch some of the inconsistencies before they'd get called out by the characters. I think by design, they made sure they're there for you to find, So when they get called out, you're like, haha, like that does make sense. I thought about the gate thing too. And like, you get to feel smart, but it took 40 minutes to get where you could have gotten in 15. I think if they just talked like the humans do, and that drove me nuts. So I can't give it like a high score for the parts that kind of worked because watching it was so agonizing. So yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll be the kind of time out of the totem pole. I know I say this a lot, but this would definitely be one of those ones that I would love for somebody to figure out a way to rework into a stage play.
Oh, I bet that would work. Yeah.
Because I think if you could get where, if you're in the same room and it's a live situation and you kind of maybe do a little bit of punch, a little bit of dialogue punching, or you do a little bit of emphasizing or really continue to work that cleverness that's in there and really put it on display. I think you can make you put people in the same room. I think you can make them really uneasy.
Oh, I think you could play this at the horror festival and feel the temperature of the room go up a few degrees because of the tension.
You know, if you kind of can really zero in on certain parts of it and then without losing the nuances that like the, one of the ones that got me that I thought about later, I went back around to make sure I hadn't made it up in my head. But one of the parts, one of the little tipping part points is where they're starting to escalate and you're starting to figure what the hell's going on or whatever else. And then there's the banging at the door. Mm-hmm. And he looks at the door and then she's looking at him. And then she looks at the door, which is not what you would do.
Right.
Yeah. If you're thinking like, maybe I'm in a threatening situation, like I'd be the one looking at the door and not confused about what my surroundings are or whatever else because I'm not actually here. And it was like him looking at the door and then causes her to. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I was like, so there was like little moments that they clearly were thinking about the mechanics of that. But to both of y'all's points, I mean, like I said, I think this is one of those prime ones where if it's on your time signature, then bam, you'll be in and you're leaning forward and whatever, versus leaning forward and being like, hurry the fuck up, which I mean, we've watched plenty of those too, where like it maybe spoke to Matt better and I tried 5 times to stay awake and couldn't do it. So you know, like I think it's definitely one of those wavelength ones, but I would, you know, like I said, I was well more on this part of it. I do like that when it's all said and done, it's a self-sabotage aspect versus like a supernatural aspect. I found that to be interesting too, because it's sort of like, it's a trapped or spider situation. And I think it's kind of nifty. So yeah, I'll be the high man on the hill on this one. I'll say 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10. It took me forever in this movie to like work out that they were talking about a gate, like a big fence. And not one of those big poles, like on a little swinging. Yeah. I was like, what's the problem with the gate? You just go rip, and then you kind of put your foot over it. Yeah. Like you're getting on a small big horse
cemetery gate. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was picturing like just one of the, like a big rod. And I was just sort of like, what's the big problem? I'm like, oh, they mean like a big fuck off. The gate, like, okay.
Like made to keep out people and cars, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I was just thinking about the cars and cattle part. I was like, I didn't piece it together. It's like, I feel
maybe she had hooves that we couldn't see.
Yeah, she had like a tattoo of a whale like that, hooves.
Has got hooves. So let's stop motion animation. We'll finish with that one. This one is your kind of artist consumed by their art kind of thing.
Yeah.
Except the artist in question is just forever not being able to express themselves because they're being controlled by, for most of the movie, famous mother, who is famous as a stop motion artist. And so trying to get out of mom's shadow, and then by a creepy kid who wants to tell her how to direct the show and may or may not be real. I think to me I still don't have a clear idea of what happened in this. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's got some real neat stop motion, and that was what I was here for because it's right there in the title. I feel like there is something to unpack there. You know, like mom is always calling her puppet. And that's, you know, puppet. Yeah. Towards the end, when she's going about her life, you hear the armature squeak as though she was being animated. And like, I don't know, it it doesn't throw away the ambiguity on like a stupid trick, and it doesn't really resolve it either.
Yeah, I think
it you end up going, okay, you know, you just bask in this for a while. You get to see some freaky, like creepy little stop motion stuff. And that's what you got.
Yeah, I loved this. Stop motion, as promised, was awesome. The couple things that stuck out to me is just noteworthy. There's a scene where she's, so like the, like she gets away, her mom like dies, right?
She has a stroke.
Coma and stuff. So like mom can no longer like force her to do stuff. So she's going to make her own thing. And then this creepy little girl that may or may not be real starts telling her creepy story. And she starts making that film. And she at some point argues with the girl and is going to do her own thing. Because the girl wants her to like make the next puppet out of like a dead fox or something. And she goes to the, her, is it her boyfriend's sister or friend or something like that, that wants to give her a job at like an ad agency using her skills. And it's like, you know, soulless commercial work that she's too good for because she's an artiste. And she learns from that gal, like, you know what I do? I get balls high and then I come up with ideas. So she's at a party later with that, with boyfriend's sister or whatever. And it's like, you know that part about just getting like rocked off my nuts high and how that's going to make me creative? What if we try that? And then you have this really amazing, like, much like we talked about earlier, like drug scene that is very much like, becomes like Suspiria with a little bit of like Fear and Loathing or whatever in it for like a few minutes. And then you have the like boyfriend like shaking her awake in the morning at her place and being like, what did you take? And when she pulls the drugs out of her sock and is like, nothing. That's fucking cool. That was really an neat. Awesome moment of like, oh, shit is unraveling on a greater level than we were heretofore aware of. Like, to me, that helps the hinge swing for the back end of the movie where it's like, oh, she's kind of fucked. Like, that's a good indicator, I think, at the midpoint of like, oh, okay, that. We've reached a point where this character doesn't have a pretty good grasp on anything at this point. And maybe the pressure on herself and from her mother and all that has kind of had her cracking a bit around the seams. The other thing that's noteworthy about this was it's been a minute, I think, since I got like physically ill and had to stop watching a movie for a minute because it was just, I was so grossed out. I got lightheaded when she is digging in her thigh, like into her quad.
Yeah.
And just going, and it takes a while, like, and they're cutting away and people are trying to stop her after a bit. And she keeps going and she pulls out just this tiny little like strip of like tendon or muscle or something. And it's tiny, but like she had to just work for it and get at it and like snap it out, you know? And I'm like, this is fucking disgusting. And I had to stop the movie and like put my head between my knees for a minute and be like, oh, okay, I don't want to pass out. Like no one else is awake. This could end badly. Like, so bravo movie for doing that thing that it seems to always be the stuff that gets me is something that isn't some big gory thing. It's something that's all the too like obvious, like, oh, you could just do that. So it just makes it feel much more visceral and real. And like, ugh, that is just intensely hard to watch. There's some good gross out shit in this movie, but that part is just excruciating. But I love the look of this. I love the style of this. It was enough that like, while you do kind of have to be okay to just sort of sit in the ambiguity at the end and sort of draw your own conclusions, I really liked kind of turning it over in my head for a couple days afterwards and just sort of finding myself like drifting back to kind of going like, oh, this scene was really cool and that, and I wonder where this is. And like, I'm going to be watching it again soon, I think, to kind of go, okay, going in knowing the full story, let's see if I come out with a more definitive idea or if I still am just left in that sort of free floating area. But yeah, I love the shit out of this. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, this was one that, like, you want to talk about one where, you know, Josh used the phrase about, like, really wanting to, like, I really want to like you. You just kind of let me like you. Kind of a, you know, this movie is just like, really, it's trying to communicate, I know it. Where one of my things that I really struggled with this one was, like, it's like nobody behaves like people. Nobody in this fucking thing. Not the nurse, not the mother, not the lady, not a single goddamn person behaves like a person. And I kept thinking, like, is it, would it have been better, and I don't want to rewrite the thing, that's shit, but like, if it's like, would it have been better if this had been like the like a setup like The Voices, where we get a presentation of her as a normal, well-adjusted kind of person, and then you get this flip over kind of cracks in the armor kind of approach, and then it comes unraveled, whatever. Because from the very beginning, in many, many sequences, I kept being like, why is this 2 degrees off of human? Like, why is everybody in this just 2 degrees off of human? Like, I'm struggling like crazy. And it's just sort of like, it wanted to keep me at arm's length, which I just like it. It gets like, it's almost that Peter Strickland kind of thing where like every one of his movies, you know, like In Fabric and Burbank Sound Studio and Duke of Burgundy and the Gourmet one. It's like, I keep watching his damn movies. He's not making movies for me, but I keep watching them like an idiot. But it's like all of his movies are just sort of like humanity adjacent, and it makes me insane. And it's like, Duke of Burgundy was one of the ones I thought I was like in a invasive body snatcher situation. I saw the world premiere of that at Fantastic Fest years ago, walked out of it being like, God, fuck you. And it was like, people were like, that was so great. It was so interesting. I was like, no, God damn it.
Oh, yeah, I had that with Barbarian Sound Studio.
No humans. You are not the human. God damn it. And so like, that was the thing that was the part that I had so much of a hard time with. This was like, I don't be like insensitive, but it's sort of like what I needed from this character was I needed to see her get to way out in Mars. Starting off with this obtuse, weird, and yes, there's abuse and there's controlling things and all those things, certainly, but it's sort of like I had nothing to anchor on from, and even boyfriend doesn't make a fucking bit of sense. Like the first time sister shows up, she's like waiting for her outside the room or whatever else, and like touches her hair and her face. I'm like, who the fuck is this person? And it was like, why is she touching her goddamn face? And it's just sort of like, and then when she's at their studio and they've got her making the eyeballs, whatever else, and she walks in, and then they're like, the way that the director guy is talking to her, and like, oh, it's our idea board and whatever else, and you're looking at the photos and all this, like why are none of these people behaving like people? None of them. And it's just like, and so I just like, I got so pissy being like, I don't appreciate being kept at arm's length movie, and it's just like, and so I just got frustrated with that. Like, it's just, there's so many great visuals and the creative stuff is so goddamn cool, but it's just that part of it just made me mental. It was just sort of like, I can't with this. And so watching her descent part of it, I couldn't dial into it, because I was just sort of like, yes, but what we started with was three pieces of bread short of a chandelier, and I was like, I don't have a reference point for her. Like, I just don't have it. And so it was more of an endurance thing. That was my way it went through. All that said, like, all the visuals and the stuff with the story and the animation and that part of it was really cool and just really beautiful and neat, and I admired the shit out of a lot of stuff. Very unnerving and creepy, and just really lovely. But it's just if we could have had a human in it, it would have been kind of neat. I know we're not supposed to complain about not seeing ourselves portrayed on screen, but I'm a human, and I would have liked to have seen a human in this. So like, while the animation stuff and that part of it is so good, like, it's just that part of it, I could not deal with to save my fucking life. And so like, so, you know, I mean, I admire a lot of what they did, and so I'll still be a positive rating, but just that part of it, I just don't appreciate, sir. So I'll just say six, because I said there's enough creative chutzpah in there that's really admirable and cool, but it's like, if they had considered casting any or writing any humans into this, it would have been, it's like the David Lynch thing, where like sometimes David Lynch ones where you're just sort of like if we could have just had one person, one mm-hmm. human character, and this would have worked so much better. So I'd say 6 out of 10. 6 out of 10. The truly unnerving part that got me was when she strangles the little girl to death, and then she just pops up behind her like, oh, did you get that out of your system? Like, ah! Mm-hmm. That was terrific. So well done there, out of 10.
Yeah, this is, for one, it made me want to see the Wolf House again.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's just
so good.
Such a river stop motion that doesn't even try to acclimate you at all. Just like, nope, you're going to be in weird land for forever. I don't know. I don't like the people who aren't human when everybody's shitty.
Yeah.
And I was reminded by that because recently someone posted on Reddit to a comment that I made 8 years ago about Contracted. And like somebody had posted about how they had just watched that on Netflix, and I felt like it was my duty to warn people. It was like, why did the doctor... She goes to the doctor with just like a war crime happening in her vag, and the doctor's like, meh, whatever. And the dude was like, clearly you didn't watch phase two, or it would have explained the doctor's behavior.
Oh, Christ's sake.
And I was like, clearly I didn't, because the fucking movie sucked. By the way, that was 8 years ago. My daughter was in diapers. But anyway.
Yeah. You win the late to the party award.
So this didn't piss me off as much as it could have, just because it wasn't that level of shitty. It was just kind of weird human behavior and then cool visuals. So I don't know. Like for me, it's a 7.5 or so out of 10. It definitely is people who have done a lot of stop motion and understand how insane doing stop motion is, but how cool it is when you get it right. So kudos to them.
Yep. I liked it the most. So I'm going to say 8.5. Motions stop making me nauseated.
Yeah.
So good.
All right, we will take a quick break then, and we'll be back with movies for next time.
Yes, sir.
So for next time, we're going to start with Late Night with the Devil. That is going to drop on Shudder on Friday the 19th. And then we're going to see Mute Witness, which is... this is like, that's when Jorshin comes on Friday the 19th. That's what they should just do with that franchise.
Jason's third cousin Kip, who just sort of like he just has some tongs.
Yeah, tongs and a sweater vest. He's a real asshole. Just
like, attacking you now is Jason Voorhees' cousin. Late Night with the Devil, Friday the 19th. Mute Witness is a 90s movie that has been kind of one of those sought after ones that
I'm excited.
Available on AMC.
Yeah.
And we're also going to watch First Omen, which is a movie film for theaters and can be found at the multiplex of your choice. Nicole Kidman will tell you why you're there. I will observe then that I have been Josh this entire time, and I'll say bye.
Next week's short film, which will be in the show notes on the website, is called It Crawled In Through the Window.
That's my favorite Beatles song.
There you go. So that'll be on the website as per usual. You can find it there along with trailers for all the movies you're going to watch. And I keep forgetting to mention, we do have a link for an email if you want to send us comments, concerns, cash. Go ahead and do that. Suggestions fine too. Yeah. But all those things are there. The Slaughterhouse Princess guys, I was chatting with them this last week, and they're like, yeah, we thought it was surprising. You guys haven't done a Discord. I'm like, it would just be yours. I'm just going to direct people to yours. So, hey, if you want to be able to chat sometimes in real time with myself, Slaughterhouse Princess folks, and some listeners, go to the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord, and you can kind of chat throughout the day or during recordings and stuff. It's pretty fun. Rather than start our own, I think it's easiest just to adopt theirs as ours as well, because then they have to do the work. And I like that. So anyway, as far as y'all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Trident Austin. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And before you know it, we'll be talking in your direction, and then you'll be able to hear it. But are you really going to hear it, man?
You haven't heard it until you've heard it on vinyl.
Yes, exactly.
Also, we'll be doing some vinyl pressings of individual episodes.
It'll be divinal. So when they listen about it, when they listen to it, they'll touch themselves. No. I take all that back.
And it will be a delight.
Yeah. Enjoy the Slaughterhouse Princess Discord, everybody.
Oh, dude,
groove
never,
is in the heart.
I was gonna say, never let delight make your records, because they will put the grooves in your heart.
Yeah. Many malpractice lawsuits. So many malpractice.
It's true.
Bad enough that the corner shop put a brim full of ash on my 45, and I got knocked over as soon as I turned it on because it's centripetal force. And
I got up again. And
I heard that somewhere, that corner shop one. I heard that pop up a couple days ago in some capacity. And it was like, but it was just wild because my brain was like, where it was like, fellas, back to the files. Like, where do we know this? How long ago was this? And we're like, okay, we'll get back to you. Like, hurry, guys, hustle. And I was like, and it was just like, it took forever to contextualize it. Like, my God.
I saw those guys live at an outdoor festival. No one involved was thrilled. It was just awful.
Well, sounds like somebody needs a bosom for a pillow.
Well, everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Everybody needs a bosom.
Nightmare Before Christmas is stop motion. That's germane, or at least Tito, to this discussion.
Could be German.
I'm thankful for
that. That was good.
Oh, it's German
Jackson, because I make that joke as often as I can.
You might as well, right?
Like, I don't think that's germane to the conversation. I don't think it's even Tito.
That's got to be a joke with diminishing returns, which is unfortunate, because like, at this point, that's less of a cultural iconography than it used to be.
Yeah, you really got to hit people over the age of 30 with that one.
I definitely used a couple Tito references during Vil 10 shows because I just thought that was funny. I even pulled out a Joe Cola reference once.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's
a deep cut.
Yeah, man, you got to go down the basement stacks for that one.
I think they filmed a porn down there once.
I can't find the book.
It's so weird having the. I always go back to saying, don't make me angry. You won't like me when I'm angry to someone at work, and having them look utterly horrified and realize they did not get that reference. Yeah, they just thought I was threatening them.
And then you realize like, oh, they don't realize that this grenade is a paperweight. Like,
right.
Oops. This is supposed to be funny.
I had to explain the whole thing before HR got involved.
Yeah. No, Lou Ferrigno. And they go, who?
Lou Ferrigno, what?